Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Good Monday morning. All eyes on Donald Trump this week.
Is the former president about to be indicted? It's March 20th. This is Today. Grand jury watch. More witnesses set to testify in the criminal case surrounding alleged hush money payments during the 2016 presidential campaign. Trump himself saying he expects to be arrested as early as tomorrow. The battle lines being drawn on Capitol Hill.
I would urge everyone to just allow the prosecutors to do their job.
Stop going after people because you have political differences.
We'll have the very latest on the case and what it could all mean for the 2024 race. Breaking overnight, bailouts, new billion-dollar deals in place to rescue failed banks both here in the U.S. and in Switzerland to help avoid a larger economic crisis. How Wall Street is reacting this morning and how it could impact your money. Spring break crackdown. Officials in Miami Beach now enforcing an emergency curfew after two deadly weekend shootings.
The unruly nature of too many and the presence of guns has created a peril that cannot go unchecked.
We're there live. NBC News exclusive. Buster Murdoch speaking out as police in South Carolina reopen an investigation into the death of his high school classmate.
As a mother, there's questions that I need to ask, and there's questions I need answers to.
We'll have the very latest, including what Murdoch is saying to us about the case and his father's trial. All that, plus on-air scare. A meteorologist recovering this morning after she collapsed on live TV.
Oh, you know, we're going to go ahead and go to break right now.
Yeah. What she's revealing about that frightening moment and her message to concerned viewers. Today, Monday, March 20th, 2023.
From NBC News, this is Today with Savannah Guthrie and Hoda Kotb, live from Studio 1A in Rockefeller Plaza.
And a good Monday morning. Welcome to Today. Thanks so much for joining us. Chanel is here early with Savannah on assignment.
Good morning.
Hoda off. And I know you were traveling this weekend, so you didn't get to see a lot of
it. You were glued to the television this weekend.
I was indeed. There was some fantastic basketball being played. A number of upsets for the second time in NCAA history. We saw a 16 seed top a one seed. In fact,
that's why people love it.
That
it's unpredictable.
And the coach of Farley Dickinson. Tobin Anderson going to join us live coming up a little bit later to talk about that Cinderella story. But we are going to start with that grand jury here in New York weighing a decision to indict former president and current candidate Donald Trump.
It's expected to hear from new witnesses today. Trump saying on social media over the weekend he would be arrested tomorrow and calling for protests should that happen.
We're going to break it all down for you this morning, starting with NBC's Garrett Hake. He is at the district attorney's office here in Manhattan. Garrett, good morning to you.
Hey, Craig, good morning. And this courthouse behind me will be the center of the political world today when grand jurors are expected to hear testimony from what could be the final witness in this years-long probe of Donald Trump and those alleged hush money payments going back to 2016. While there's been no formal word from any prosecutors about an indictment, law enforcement officials here in New York City are preparing for that possibility to come as soon as this week.
New York City bracing this morning for what could be an unprecedented decision by a Manhattan grand jury. Whether to indict a former president for the first time in history. Donald Trump shocking the political world Saturday, predicting on his social media platform that he would be arrested on Tuesday, calling on his supporters to protest. A Trump spokesperson later clarifying the former president had not been notified he will be charged. Still, Mr. Trump's declaration is already galvanizing his supporters, with prominent Republicans rallying to his defense. Among them, the Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, who vowed to use congressional committees to investigate New York City's investigation. But McCarthy is distancing himself from Mr. Trump's call for protests.
I don't think people should protest this, no. And I think President Trump, if you talk to him, he doesn't believe that either.
Also weighing in, Mr. Trump's potential rivals for the 2024 Republican nomination.
It just feels like a politically charged prosecution here. And I, for my part, just feel like it's just not what the American people want to see.
While the Manhattan DA's office isn't commenting, their case centers on whether then-candidate Donald Trump in 2016 directed his attorney, Michael Cohen, to pay off adult film star Stormy Daniels, who claimed she had an affair with Mr. Trump a decade prior.
Donald Trump needs to be held accountable for his dirty deeds.
The former president has denied any wrongdoing and is accusing Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg of a, quote, partisan witch hunt. For his part, Bragg isn't responding to the criticism publicly, but told his staff in an email, quote, your safety is our top priority. And without naming Mr. Trump, adding, quote, we do not tolerate attempts to intimidate our office or threaten the rule of law in New York.
Now, with all eyes on the grand jury's next move, later today, they'll hear from Robert Costello, a former legal advisor to Cohen, but who's been asked to testify today by Mr. Trump's attorneys, according to a source with direct knowledge. Now, two other sources tell us there's going to be an intra-agency security review here in New York City for law enforcement to plan for what could happen here if and when an indictment is handed down. Craig?
All right. Garrett Haake for us this morning. Let's turn now to NBC's senior legal correspondent, Laura Jarrett. Laura, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So obviously we won't know the specific charges until if there's an indictment, that indictment is unsealed. But what kinds of charges could the former president be looking at here? Help us understand this case.
So the facts aren't really in dispute. The key crux of this, as best we understand, is that Michael Cohen makes the payment to Stormy Daniels in the waning days of the 2016 election to try to keep quiet about this affair. Now, the payment of hush money on its face is not necessarily illegal.
Okay.
The legal case comes in here because of the way that the payments were documented when Trump reimburses Cohen on the books of the Trump organization. And because they were documented as legal expenses, legal retainer, when in fact they were hush money payments, that's the crux. And the idea there is when they're documented in that false way, that's creating a false business record under New York law. And that's where the crime, potentially, if that's what this is, that's where it comes into play. So it's not the hush money payment itself. No. It's the way it's documented.
But is that usually a felony?
No. And that's where this is going to get tricky fast for prosecutors. Normally, that would be a misdemeanor. In order to elevate it to a felony, which we're talking about jail time here, maximum 4 years for falsification, there has to be a second crime. The actual falsification of that records has to be in service of some second crime. And the key is, we don't know what that second crime is.
Okay.
Now, there's a lot of theories out there. Maybe it has to do with a campaign finance violation. We know Cohen pled guilty to that back in the day. Maybe it's some state election campaign finance violation. We simply don't know what the second crime is. And so right now, we believe that, of course, the grand jury is looking into a felony, but we don't yet know all the contours of it.
If the grand jury does vote to indict the former president, then what happens?
Okay, so in the typical case, realizing that we are talking about a very specific defendant, potential defendant here, in the typical case, once the grand jury indicts, that indictment goes under seal in the court, which means we would not see it. At that point, at some point soon thereafter, the former president's attorneys would be notified the client should come in, turn himself in. He'll come in for fingerprinting. He'll come in for processing. They'll run a criminal background check. At some point, then he will come in for an arraignment. That part is public. We would see him.
Okay.
If, in fact, he was indicted, we would see that in front of a court. But the rest would happen behind closed doors. Of course, all of this is happening, you know, in front of the cameras. It would be obviously in an unprecedented event,
sure.
But we are not there yet. We are a long way away from that right now, Greg.
Our senior legal correspondent, Laura Jarrett. Laura, thank you.
Of course.
Turning now to a meeting in Moscow that's being closely watched. Vladimir Putin hosting a high-profile summit with Chinese leader Xi this week. It comes just days after the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant for Russia's president, accusing him of war crimes. And Putin made defiant and surprise visits to Russian-occupied areas in Ukraine. NBC's chief international correspondent Keir Simmons has the latest. Keir, good morning.
Chanel, good morning to you. President Xi has arrived in Russia after a lunch with President Putin. The two men will sit down for an informal bilateral meeting. The Russian leader attempting to show strength over the weekend. In reality, he's more reliant on China than ever. President Xi and President Putin meeting in Moscow today as personal friends and fellow autocrats. Though striking notably different tones in newspaper op-eds this morning, Putin slamming the US strategy of double containment of Russia and China, Xi calling for dialogue over Ukraine while supporting Russia. Putin showing no interest in compromise, this weekend travelling by helicopter for his first known visit to territory illegally occupied by his forces, travelling to Mariupol, devastated by a Russian onslaught, the Kremlin's camera filming him telling residents in a new apartment, sorry to bother you, even driving himself, but all under the cover of darkness. In daylight, this is what most of Mariupol looks like after a devastating Russian onslaught. This is the city where a theater of civilians was targeted, hundreds died, and where a maternity hospital was shelled, killing and wounding pregnant women. Ukraine's presidential office saying the criminal is always drawn to the scene of the crime. Putin accused of war crimes by the International Criminal Court for the illegal deportation of children from Ukraine to Russia, casually walking past a newly constructed playground. The Kremlin calling the international arrest warrant outrageous, unacceptable, and void. The US signalling to Russia and China attempts at a deal to end the war, but leaving places like Mariupol in Russian hands will fail.
If, coming out of this meeting, there's some sort of call for a ceasefire, well, that's just going to be unacceptable.
President Xi hoping to present himself as a diplomat this week. President Putin viewing the Chinese leader's visit as a diplomatic victory. In the days to come, President Putin will act, Chanel, as if he no longer cares what Europe and America thinks. President Xi, with all of China's economic ties to the West, definitely does care, even as he increasingly openly challenges the US. Chanel?
All right, Keir, thank you.
Also this morning, we are following several new developments aimed at containing a global banking crisis. New York Community Bank has agreed to buy a major portion of a failed Signature Bank. Meanwhile, overseas, UBS, the largest bank in Switzerland, is acquiring its troubled rival, Credit Suisse, in an emergency rescue deal aimed at curbing panic in the global financial markets. NBC's business reporter Brian Chung is here to try and explain what this all means in this ongoing saga. So let's start here. New York Community Bank buying a significant chunk of a failed Signature Bank. Top line takeaways. And what does it mean for folks who have money in those banks?
Yeah, good morning. All this is still the fallout from what we saw over the weekend prior to that, where two banks in the United States ended up going under. This is Signature Bank. It's not Silicon Valley Bank, which has been getting a lot of attention. This is a New York-based bank that went under last Sunday. The federal government came in through the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, took up those assets, and they were able to sell them to another bank. Okay. This is New York Community Bank. It's known as Flagstar at the Main Street level. So essentially, any customers of Signature Bank effective this morning will now be customers of Flagstar Bank. So nothing else changes. Again, the deposit insurance is still the same because the FDIC came in and said, we're going to make sure that all of your deposits are whole if you have money at Signature Bank. But again, now you are a Flagstar customer if you were formerly a customer of Signature Bank. As you mentioned, it's not the whole business. The FDIC only sold about 35% of the business to Flagstar. There were some loans and some crypto businesses that were part of Signature that were not part of that deal. But look, broadly speaking, this shows confidence that if your bank goes under, the government will come in to help out in the interim, but they'll ultimately be able to sell it to another bank to make sure that you still have your business continuing as normal.
So then let's turn overseas now to Switzerland's largest bank, UBS, taking over, as Craig just mentioned, its smaller rival in an emergency rescue deal brokered by the Swiss government. Talk more about this. What are the implications of this? What should we take from it?
Chanel, all of that unfolding yesterday. I mean, the reason why this is so significant, the reason why we here in the United States need to care about what's happening in Switzerland is because Credit Suisse is defined as one of the 30 most systemic banks in the world by global regulators. Essentially, what that means, systemic, is that if one of those 30 banks were to fail, it could create a global financial crisis. So a very serious situation that unfolded over there. Credit Suisse, by the way, is magnitudes larger than Silicon Valley Bank, which is why a lot of people cared. Again, what was essentially happened was that they brokered a deal, the Swiss government, with UBS to merge them together, take a healthy bank, merge it with one that wasn't so healthy so they can both stand up as one organization. U.S. regulators are watching this, and we actually heard yesterday they said that supports financial stability. So hopefully that deal avoiding any sort of issues that will be coming out of Switzerland.
Right. You always help us understand. Mm-hmm. Brian Chung, thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Turning now to a somber anniversary being marked today. 20 years since the start of the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq aimed at toppling Saddam Hussein. NBC's chief foreign correspondent Richard Engel is in Baghdad for us today. Richard, good morning.
Good morning. It is hard to believe that it has been 20 years since the start of the war. This square became iconic because it was where the giant statue of Saddam Hussein was that was pulled down by Iraqis, by U.S. troops. I was here at the time, and this is all that remains of that statue, just a tiny fragment of the base. This country has changed so much over the years in ways that many Americans may find surprising.
The United States invaded Iraq 20 years ago today, launching what would become an 8-year war. Now, Iraq is finally springing back to life. The old bazaars are bustling again, and American troops have been replaced by American tourists.
It's great to interact with these lovely people. They are so kind.
This group is traveling all across the country without security. It's no longer needed.
Okay, let's go.
Yalla. The cradle of civilization is inviting the world back.
I love it.
Photos are no problem. Iraqis are delighted tourists are returning.
And what do you think so far? How's this experience?
People are so friendly. I was not expecting them to be so friendly. I mean, they really are very, very kind. And they'll ask if you're American, and they say, I love you.
This would have been unthinkable not long ago. In 2007, at the peak of the civil war unleashed by the American invasion, this bazaar was obliterated by a suicide bomber. Dozens were killed. Iraq still has deep scars from the war. Tens of thousands lost their lives. The country remains deeply corrupt, and the government is dominated by Iraq's neighbor, Iran. But there are signs of hope. Saddam Hussein's former lakefront palace is now the American University in Baghdad. All classes are co-ed, all taught in English. The plan is for 35,000 students, and it's expanding quickly.
So where are the dormitories going to go?
Probably in here, and maybe we'll fill in a little of the lake and put them around here. We're still debating it. This land here will probably be College of Engineering, Architecture, Agriculture.
This is a hugely ambitious project.
Yeah, it really is.
President Mulnix works out of Saddam's old office. His initials are still etched into the ceiling.
One of the worst dictators in the history of mankind, and it's becoming an educational institution for the young people of Iraq. So there's a certain, I don't know, I call it poetic justice, a certain symmetry in what's happening here.
Many of the students are too young to remember Saddam. Instead, their childhoods were defined by the American occupation.
How's life in Iraq these days?
We need to change world idea about Iraq. You can see, we are living in peace.
Freedom to speak, freedom to live, freedom to do anything.
We are the future of Iraq. Iraq is need us.
And for the first time in years, Iraqis who fled the violence are returning to build a better future.
I mentioned those Iranian-backed militias, and they are very significant. And in many ways, this square encapsulates the entire experience of this country. Saddam Hussein's statue is gone, but it has been replaced by this giant mural of Qasem Soleimani, an Iranian general who was killed in a U.S. airstrike. So some Iraqis will say that the United States came, toppled Saddam, but opened the door for Iran.
So interesting. Richard Engel in Baghdad for us. Thank you.
Really hard to believe it has been 20 years. Yeah. Lots more to get to on a Monday morning, including a first check of the weather on this first day of spring.
That's
Mr.
Right.
Roker?
Coming in at 526 this evening.
Okay. Oh my goodness.
It doesn't match that screen. That's
I'm telling
sure.
you, this is I-96 near Portland, Michigan, a 150 car pileup. I mean, the traffic was blocked for hours. The good news is no major injuries reported, but winter not quite done yet, especially out west, as we're going to be watching for winter storm watches, winter weather advisories, winter storm warnings as another system comes
onshore, and that's going to be going another coast to coast or making its way up into the northeast later on this week. But for today, heavy snow and rain pushing into the Four Corners, steady snow lingering across the northwest, and this atmospheric river, luckily not strong, but still is going to enhance the precipitation with the flood threat increasing for Southern California right on into Wednesday. This entire system continues to shift to the east. Rainfall amounts, some spots could see upwards of 5 inches in the San Bernardino Mountains. As far as the snowfall is concerned, you can see heavier snow in the Sierra Range, 1 to 4 feet above 6,000 feet, 2 to 4 feet above 6,000 feet for the San Gabriel Mountains. And that snow extends all the way back into the upper Midwest and Great Lakes. So winter, not quite done yet. And that is your latest weather.
All right, Al, thank you. Still ahead, a spring break state of emergency in Miami Beach in the wake of 2 weekend shootings and large, unruly crowds. Sam Brock is there. Sam?
Yeah, Chanel, in the weeks leading up to spring break, the mayor of Miami Beach had one message for people coming down here. Don't bring firearms. That's it. That's all he asked. 2 fatal shootings later, the city had to take emergency action. We'll tell you how long this is expected to last coming up next.
Also ahead here, Alec Murdoch's surviving son, Buster, speaking out exclusively to NBC News this morning. What Buster is revealing as police reopen an investigation into the 2015 death of his high school classmate. Katie Beck's going to have the very latest on that. But first, this is Today on NBC.
It's time to breathe easier this allergy season with Breathe Right Nasal Strips. With instant nasal congestion relief for up to 12 hours, you can spend your time on your terms, not on your noses. Stuffy nose from outdoor allergens? No problem. We got you. Allergy season just turned into stripping season. Instant relief from nasal congestion anytime, anywhere. Need more convincing? Click the banner below and get a free sample. Breathe Right. Get your strip on. Use as directed.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/today. Just go to Indeed.com/today right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/today. Conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We couldn't think of a better person to begin this tradition than our own Adam Sandler.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, Adam, are you ready?
Yes, I am, Kevin. I've worked all week on my song, and I hope you'll be entertained and a little moved.
We are back at 7:30 with an Adam Sandler classic from his days on SNL. Why? You might ask, well, as Jacob Soboroff joins us, we can tell you that overnight, the Sandman was awarded the prestigious Mark Twain Prize for American Humor.
Congratulations, Mr. Sandler. Big fan of the Hanukkah song here.
Yeah, well-deserved indeed.
Yes. Oh,
we're
so
have
good.
More coming up on that in Pop Start.
Yeah, we sure will. But first, we got a busy half hour ahead, starting with new spring break safety concerns on this first day of spring.
Yeah, after a few weeks of relative calm down in Miami Beach, things erupted over the weekend with rowdy crowds and 2 fatal shootings.
The city responding by issuing a state of emergency and putting a curfew in place. NBC's Sam Brock is there for us. Sam, good morning.
Yeah, Chanel, guys, good morning. This all changed very quickly. The curfew here just expired in Miami Beach at 6 o'clock this morning, and it comes after the mayor of Miami Beach pleaded with people coming down here not to bring firearms in what has now proven to be an eerily similar replay of violence that happened on this weekend last year. We'd like to warn you, the images you're about to see are disturbing.
Once again, after weeks of normal spring break partying,
Gunfire shattering the peace on Miami Beach's most recognizable and bustling street, Ocean Drive. After days of violence, the city issuing a state of emergency and a curfew from midnight to 6 a.m.
Someone decided to just start shooting, and then everyone started running.
On Friday night, visitors ducking for cover as shots rang out, leaving one person dead and another critically injured.
People come here to have a good time, and it's very sad what happened.
Packed restaurants and hotels, the epicenters of chaos, as officers arrested a suspect and seized four firearms. Then, less than 30 hours later, and just blocks away, another fatal shooting on Ocean Drive, the moments captured on this surveillance footage. The mayor of Miami Beach losing patience after years of deja vu delinquency.
The unruly nature of too many and the presence of guns has created a peril that cannot go unchecked.
Authorities putting all of South Beach under curfew. This map outlining a blanket of blocks and multiple party strips, with businesses in the area needing patrons out by 11:59 p.m. Hotels could still provide service, but only to guests, and restaurants were only allowed delivery after midnight. From the streets of South Beach to the shores of Cancun, authorities on high alert. Members of the Mexican Navy and National Guard patrolling the popular tourist destination from day to night. American spring breakers still flocking to the area, even after Texas state officials issued an urgent warning against travel to Mexico, citing ongoing violence in the country. In several places, many seemingly unfazed, as crowds in Miami Beach still turned out in droves, eager to have a good time.
Sam, how long is this curfew expected to last there in Miami Beach?
Right, so Chanel, we mentioned it expired at 6 a.m. this morning, but the Miami Beach Commission is expected to meet later this afternoon and consider implementing the same measures for this Thursday through the following Monday. The expectation, Chanel, is that is going to happen, and there is certainly urgency in the situation right now, as the mayor acknowledged that there have been some 70 firearms impounded just in the last 3 weeks alone.
Such a tough situation. All right, Sam, thank you.
Sam, thanks so much. Guys, coming up, we're launching a new series, Money Saving Mondays, and we are starting with your groceries. Prices still are soaring. How you can help your food stay fresh longer, that's coming up right next.
All right, first, though, an NBC News exclusive this morning. Buster Murdoch speaking out on the decision to reopen the investigation into the death of his high school classmate. And he's also talking about his father's trial as well. Katie Beck will have that for us right after this.
It's time to breathe easier this allergy season with Breathe Right Nasal Strips. With instant nasal congestion relief for up to 12 hours, you can spend your time on your terms, not on your noses. Stuffy nose from outdoor allergens? No problem. We got you. Allergy season just turned into stripping season. Instant relief from nasal congestion anytime, anywhere. Need more convincing? Click the banner below and get a free sample. Breathe Right. Get your strip on. Use as directed.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
We are back at 7:39 with Alec Murdoch's family back in the spotlight.
And this morning we have exclusive new details on a cold case that's receiving renewed attention.
Yeah, this one involves the 2015 death of Buster Murdoch's high school classmate. It was originally ruled a hit and run, but now that investigation is being reopened. And NBC's Katie Beck has made her way to Columbia, South Carolina. She's followed all the twists and turns in this story. And Katie, you heard from Buster Murdoch himself.
That's right. Good morning, guys. Yeah, Buster Murdoch and Stephen Smith were high school classmates. And for the first time, Buster Murdoch is speaking out, denying what he calls vicious rumors tying him to Smith's death. In the meantime, Smith's family is seeking an independent review of this case to try and finally find justice.
For nearly 8 years, Sandy Smith has been pushing for answers in the death of her son, Stephen.
The 19-year-old was found dead in 2015 in what state investigators originally called a hit and run on a rural road in Hampton County, South Carolina.
As a mother, there's questions that I need to ask, and there's questions I need answers to.
Smith believes the initial findings may have been wrong and that someone murdered her son and staged it to look like an accident. It's a case that's never been solved, but as authorities looked into the murders of Maggie and Paul Murdoch, they say information came to light, prompting them to reopen Smith's investigation. Smith's death has also received renewed attention from a recent Netflix docuseries about the Murdoch murders and other cases with potential ties to the once prominent family. In multiple interviews, locals discussed rumors of an alleged relationship between Stephen and Buster Murdoch. But Buster Murdoch has never been charged with any crime in the case. And for the first time this morning, he's denying any involvement, telling NBC News exclusively in a statement, "I've tried my best to ignore the vicious rumors about my involvement in Stephen Smith's tragic death that continue to be published in the media as I grieve over the brutal murders of my mother and brother. I love them so much and miss them terribly." Buster Murdoch, who took the stand in his father's trial, adding, "These baseless rumors of my involvement with Stephen and his death are false. I unequivocally deny any involvement in his death, and my heart goes out to the Smith family." Sandy Smith says she doesn't know who's responsible for her son's death.
"But I want to know why you did it, and I want to find out who you are."
Now, thanks to thousands of dollars in online donations, she wants Stephen's body exhumed and an independent autopsy performed.
When it comes to an exhumation, there are several pitfalls that you have to look out for, namely, preparation of the remains.
Despite the potential hurdles, Sandy Smith says she remains hopeful.
"Peace, not closure. It'll never be closed because he's forever gone."
I mean, Katie, what are the next steps if they do move forward with a potential independent autopsy?
Well, Craig, before any autopsy can be completed, a judge actually has to grant permission for the exhumation to take place. Now, Sandy Smith's attorneys say they plan to petition a judge and make a case for that, even have a show cause hearing to show why this is necessary now. If the judge does grant that, they will exhume the body and say have an independent autopsy done within several weeks. But it all depends on that judge's decision, and that is still weeks away from now.
Yeah. Craig. Interesting to hear from Buster Murdoch there. Katie Beckforth there in Columbia. Katie, thank you.
All right, let's switch gears now and check back in with Al.
Okay, guys. Well, even though spring begins today, down south doesn't feel like it. Freeze watches and warnings stretching from the Carolinas all the way to Tyler, Texas, and down into Louisiana. So a few record lows this morning possible. Look at this. New Orleans right now, 39 degrees, 29 in Atlanta, 39 in Jacksonville, Charlotte rating 30, 22 degrees this morning in Nashville. And it stays chilly today. Average highs today, 9 degrees below average for Nashville, 53, Houston, 61, Charleston, 57. Orlando, 9 degrees cooler than average with a high of 69. That chilly weather stays from tomorrow from Kansas City down to Biloxi, all into Myrtle Beach and Jacksonville. But temperatures do start warming up. Look at here in New York City, Friday, 64 degrees. How's it? How I feel about that? Yeah. Yes. Look at it. 80 degrees in Norfolk.
Yes.
Charlotte's going to be in the low 80s. Nashville, by Thursday, you're going to be near 80 degrees. So springtime's coming, baby. Punxsutawney Phil, how do you like that, pal? And that is your latest weather, guys.
All right, thank you, Al. Just ahead, the concert history that Taylor Swift has already made after just one weekend of her big tour. Carson will have that and more on Popstar.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.